Thank you for downloading or streaming today's episode of the PW Torch Livecast. In just a couple minutes, we'll get you to the show. But first, I want to let you know about our big $1 VIP sale. If you have not become a PW Torch VIP member, this is the best time of year to do it. We are running our $1 sale in association with it being SummerSlam month. We are creating a SummerSlam special section on the PW Torch VIP website that will feature links to our SummerSlam reports dating back to when the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter started in the late 1980s through this year's. We're also creating a collection of our post-SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtables dating back to the mid-2000s. The last dozen SummerSlams have been covered with post-pay-per-view roundtables since we launched the PW Torch VIP website in the mid-2000s, and you can subscribe to that feed on your smartphone and listen to what we had to say the night of SummerSlam for the last dozen years. And you can subscribe to it exclusively as a VIP member on your smartphone or in iTunes. Just like all VIP audio, you can subscribe on your iPhone, Android, or through iTunes, or stream it directly from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. You also get everything else that comes with a VIP membership, ad-free access to our website, exclusive articles, the new weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter chronicling wrestling history in depth, the biggest stories, the biggest events, obscure house show results, TV reports, exclusive columns, cover stories, and so much more. 1,500 plus back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Also, in the month of July, we posted over 130 podcasts for our VIP members. The live casts are great. They're even better when the commercials are edited out. And that's a bonus for VIP members. The commercials are edited out of the PW Torch live casts, and they're available for your convenience on our VIP audio feed, in addition to VIP exclusive shows that only VIP members listen to. I host The Fix with Todd Martin midweek for about 2 hours, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show on weekends for about 2 hours. The two top wrestling analysts in the business are part of PW Torch VIP every week. I also record the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. I've recorded it every single day for 8 years. No days off. You wake up, and there it is, the Wade Keller Hotline with the latest breaking news, my answers to VIP member questions, and every Monday night and Tuesday night, a detailed rundown with my analysis of both Raw and SmackDown. So much more comes with the VIP membership. Get full details at pwtorch.com/govip. And the coupon code for our sale is livecast2017. No space, lowercase, livecast2017. Enter that in the promo code box on our mobile-friendly sign-up form, and you are in for $1 for one full month. Or you can take that $9 discount and apply it to a three-month or a one-year subscription. That means that a $99 subscription for 1 year gets dropped down to $90, which equates to paying just on average $7.50 a month for the next year. If you are a fan of our work here on the PW Torch Livecast and my new show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast over at Podcast One, you will love the PW Torch VIP audio lineup. So go VIP for $1 or take $9 off a longer-term subscription. This offer expires soon. Don't miss out. pwtorch.com/govip. Enter promo code LiveCast2017. That's LiveCast2017. No space in there. LiveCast2017. We'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to earn your business for the long run. Find out what people love about their PW Torch VIP membership and get more of what you love in terms of pro wrestling podcasts brought to you by the team at Pro Wrestling Torch.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from picturesque Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2017. I am Rich Fan. You are listening to The Deep Dive here on the PW Torch Livecast, and I am going to be talking to you. Make sure you give a call to area code 515-605-9345 so you can join in on the fun. And if you can't do that, definitely try to consider going to pwtdive@gmail.com. Now, this is the first time in the history of the Deep Dive, you know, a month and a half strong, where we're going to get to do hashtag the list. And this week's the list has to do with SummerSlam. You guys got the homework. We have the answers. And we're going to be talking to you guys soon. And I keep speaking in the royal we, but I really mean to use the regular we, because my co-host this week is a pretty cool dude, a lifesaver, and generally, when it comes to conversations about pro wrestling, one of the most astute gentlemen I know, Mr. Steve Williams. Steve, how are you doing this evening?
You know, Rich, it is a pleasure to be here. I am happy to be the first one to join you here to do the list live and in the PW Torch airwaves. This should be a fun show.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, for those of you guys don't know, we're using the Jim Smallman of hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Piece Network rules. You have to list your top five, and you can only include a wrestler once, and you can only include a show once. So this leads to a lot of difficulties as far as picking your favorites. And we've got several emails, we've got some callers on hold, and I'm looking forward to it. How about you, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. One question. With the two of us each coming up with five, do our five rule each other out? Say if I want to pick, I don't know, Kama versus Taker from 95, does that take Kama versus Taker off the list for you?
Oh, no. No, absolutely not, because that would drive – that would be a step too far, and I think that would be into a Saw level, you know, torture porn level of preventing people from enjoying wrestling. And I think at that point people would try to hunt me down here in Pittsburgh and shank me. But no, I think my goal tonight is, I think over the course of the next hour, you and I can give our top five, going from five to one, with one being our top match out of the five and so on, and just kind of chat about why we picked them. And then, you know, in between us talking about ours, I've got some emails, we've got some callers, and we can kind of argue with them about why they picked their match over our match.
All right. Sounds good.
Awesome. So I'm going to start. Actually, you know what? Since you're the guest, why don't you start with number five? Because I don't want to be a jerk here.
All right. Well, I'm going to piss off the internet immediately and say that my number five is Bret Hart versus Davey Boy Smith from 1992. And I say I'm going to piss off the internet because I'm sure that a fair bit of people out there will have this as their number one. It's a widely regarded match. I've always thought it to be good, but a little boring for my taste at times. It's kind of long for the sake of long. And plus there's the revelation since that Davey Boy Smith allegedly, cough, cough, may or may not have been high on crack that entire summer and maybe was not at his best going into this match. I mean, it's good. It was a great kickoff for Davey Boy, but then he didn't do a whole lot for several years after this match, so it's kind of has an asterisk to me as a failed opportunity. Rich, what are your thoughts on this match?
I really enjoy it. The finish with the roll up and Brett's just disgust, and they got to play the, you know, if anyone's ever had an argument with family or played a pickup game with family and you have that post-win or post-loss reaction where you just have to be the nice guy about it, I completely get why Brett was so angry. And he kind of had to take a minute. But in real life, that would have been like by Thanksgiving the next year they would have healed instead of like a solid 5 minutes. But I've always enjoyed that match. I've been a sucker my entire life for any time Davey Boy had the fresh off Jamaica vacation dreads. So,
but like he just took a singles cruise.
Oh yeah, definitely. He was finding himself. He was in an Eat Pray Love situation, and he just kind of went from there. Now, I unfortunately did not pick that match, so there's no fighting, there's no crying,
oh,
there's
wow.
no wailing, and gnashing of teeth. My fifth match is in a similar vein, no pun intended, because it's Ravishing Rick Rude, Ultimate Warrior, SummerSlam 89. And that's my favorite match because, or my fifth favorite match. One, it's the Ultimate Warrior so gassed that he's basically a dead body that Rick Rude bumps for 20 minutes. And two, the combination of the announcers having outside Bobby Heenan losing his mind, and this being, you know, the second match that him and Warrior had at that point, really just made it a fun thing for me, and it's a guilty pleasure and one of my most favorite SummerSlam matches because of that guilty pleasure factor. What are your thoughts on my number five?
You know, that just missed my cut. It was my number six match. Rude does a lot of crazy stuff in that match. At one point, there's a German suplex from the top rope almost. There's a damn gonzo bomb in there. You know, for 1989 WWF, it really is just above and beyond the stuff these guys were doing. The Warrior has a rap as not being a great worker, but he had certain guys that could really pull something out of him. And Rick Rude was absolutely one of those guys. The only thing I don't like about the finish or the match itself would be the finish with Roddy Piper coming out and mooning Rick Rude for the distraction finish. That cheapens it just a little bit with me, but all in all, not a bad pick at all. I think that's a solid number five.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a good segue to getting to our first caller. I do believe this is our good friend and New Jersey, Kylan, is this you? New Jersey, Kylan.
Yes, it is. Rich, how are you?
Good. Dive on in, sir.
So, after an extremely arduous selection process over the past week, I have officially selected my top five SummerSlam matches, which may surprise a few people. In no particular order, I'm going with the very first semi-main event that I saw, which would be Shawn Michaels versus Triple H. The match that Steve just mentioned, Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. In one of my surprise candidates, Stone Cold versus The Undertaker.
So what attracted you? Go ahead, Kylan. That was my bad.
Randy Orton versus Christian. And finally, Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle, number two.
And what were your reasoning behind each of the matches?
Well, I picked Shawn versus Triple H, as I said, because that was the very first semi-main event that I ever saw, being that SummerSlam 2002 was the first wrestling program that I ever watched 15 years ago. I picked Bret versus the British Bulldog because I think that is the best overall work match in the history of SummerSlam. I picked the Stone Stone Cold versus The Undertaker due to their extremely diametrically opposed characters, I picked Randy Orton versus Christian because that match showed that you could still have an effectively brutal match in the No Blood PG era. And I picked Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar number 2 because of the amateur background of both individuals and to honor them for their successful transitions into WWE.
Awesome. Now, what did you think about the two matches that Steve and I mentioned so far? Rude Warrior 89 and Brett and the Bulldog from 92.
Rude Warrior to me is a demonstration that you do not have to be the greatest of workers to succeed in the wrestling business. And as I said, I picked Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog because I think it is the best overall worked match in the history of SummerSlam as a brand of a show.
Awesome. So, what? Anything else for us before we move on down the road?
In my honorable mentions, I would have had, if you could repeat Superstar, which you can't, but if you allowed us to do that, I would have picked from SummerSlam 92, I would have picked Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior, and the latter rematch from SummerSlam 1995 with Shawn Michaels and Scott Hall.
Ooh, that's a good choice. That is a That's a spicy meatball, so to speak. Sorry, Steve, didn't mean to go with that one that hard. But Kylan, as always, thank you very much for the call. What about you, Steve? What are your thoughts on Sir Kylan's list?
You know, that's certainly not a bad list at all. In fact, I like that he threw out the honorable mention of Ladder Match 2, which is kind of a forgotten gem. One that was held back a little bit by the fact that they couldn't use the ladders as a weapon, so it turned into a really smartly worked match around that. I had no idea until years later that that was a stipulation there had been given. Yeah, that's good work on that, Colin. That's not a bad list at all.
Awesome. And we have, let's see, several emails, and when we come back, we will address those, and we will get to the reigning, defended, and longest-running PW Torch VIP member in existence when we return to the deep dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, and we're back on the deep dive with Rich Fan. talking SummerSlam top five matches with you. 515-605-9345. PWTDive@gmail.com. And I'm talking with my buddy Steve Williams. And we're talking, not that Steve Williams. And we're talking, well, I guess it could be that Steve Williams. And we're talking about what you want to talk about. So let me bring Steve back. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. And we are now going to have the privilege of talking to the man who belongs to the 623 area code. Mr. C 623, as you're now known in the annals of pro wrestling Torch history, state your name, where you're calling from, how long you've been a Torch member, and drop them knowledge.
Hey, Rich, hey, Steve. This is Brian calling from Phoenix, 26-year PW Torch VIP subscriber.
Outstanding. Brian, what do you got for us? What are you bringing to the top five table?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say hi to Steve. First time Steve and I have ever talked to each other. So, hey, Steve.
Hey, Brian. It's a pleasure to finally hear your voice, man.
It's good to talk to you as well. So I'm going to break format a little bit, and I'm going to keep the show running along. I'm not going to give you a top five. I'm just going to give you a match I just watched, and I was pretty excited when it actually came on. From SummerSlam 88, it would be the Honky Tonk Man calling out anybody from the locker room to wrestle for his Intercontinental Championship, and then the Ultimate Warrior comes out. 31 seconds later, he's the champion. So that's the match I'm just going to talk about very briefly.
Sure. So what was the biggest reason why you chose that match?
Well, it's a lot of things. First of all, for the first SummerSlam, I was always a huge Randy Savage fan, so I'm looking forward to the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks match. And, you know, again, background really briefly is that Honky Tonk was supposed to wrestle Brutus Beefcake. Brutus Beefcake got into the parasailing accident, destroyed his face. Honky Tonk Man didn't have an opponent, so that's why he made the call out. And I had a friend of mine, my best friend from high school, he used to come over and watch wrestling with me. He was like a passive fan. And so he came over and watched it, and he was excited that the Warrior won, because like one of the first couple times he saw him. And you know, I was with Warrior, that was back when they did a really slow build with him. You know, he was doing, you know, came from World Class. He was doing those opening matches, and then he kind of slowly built up to his WrestleMania match. He had that year would have been against Hercules. And so, you know, he was kind of slowly climbing up, and then, the Intercontinental title back then was huge. So for him to run out, go through, destroy Honky Tonk, and leave with it, that was the exciting part about it.
And for you, I mean, obviously as a 26-year VIP, you can do what you want. You're like Honey Badger, you just don't care. Is there any other match that you would want to highlight or sell the fans to watch and appreciate other than the 88 match with Warrior and Tonk, as he's known in the streets?
I'll go with what Kylan said about that, the forgotten second ladder match with Shawn Michaels and Razor. Similarly, I was a Shawn Michaels fan, but I appreciated what Scott Hall / Razor Ramon could do. And I was a little afraid for Shawn Michaels, but, you know, ultimately he came out. So that's probably my other one, I would say. I would put under consideration, let's say that.
Okay, fair enough. And since you were kind enough to grace us with your presence, I'm going to keep you on as Steve and I give our fourth pick and get your opinion on what we pick. Steve, why don't you start, and then I'll return fire.
All right, I went with a more modern choice for my number four and went with John Cena versus Daniel Bryan from 2013. Quite possibly one of the more sound main event matches in company history. The only reason it's not higher on my list is more to where my headspace was as a fan in 2013. Had this match happened when I was 15, 16, 17, really super into the product, it probably would be my number one. But looking at it objectively, there's no denying it's one of the best pay-per-view main events they've ever had.
What do you think, Brian?
That is a really good choice. I'm going to tell you something, Steve. The thing that kind of left a little bitter taste in my mouth, and I was actually thinking about this the other day, is that so prior or earlier in that SummerSlam, I'm going to make sure hopefully I got my timing right, is that was also the match, was that the fire match where Kane had against Bray Wyatt? I'm pretty sure that was the Inferno match, I should say.
Yes, that was the opener of that show.
And the part that, so even today you hear people say about, well, how come Roman Reigns doesn't go out and help out Dean and stuff when they get attacked or things like that. And there's always been a very loose baby face helping each other out system in WWE. But the part I didn't like about it was, so you have both both other members of the Wyatts. So you have Eric Rowan and Luke Harper on the sidelines, and then I think they covered up the Inferno so they can get in and help out Bray, but the Inferno supposed to keep them out. And so it was basically three against one, and I'm thinking, okay, where's Daniel Bryan? Because that was just not at the tail end of Hell No, Team Hell No. They were still friends. So how come Daniel Bryan didn't run out to help him? But, you know, I can rationalize it saying, well, he's in the back, you know, prepping for his huge main event match against John Cena. I can rationalize it that way, but there was no thought pattern from the IWC, I'll say IWC, about that. So that was my roundabout way to talk about that choice.
Now, Bryan, he had that – you can't have a beard that's that big and lush and vibrant near such open flames. That would have been a disaster. The beard would have sinned straight to the skin. They would have had to cancel the main event of SummerSlam. He had the company's best interests in mind by sacrificing his good friend, Libertarian Kane, to the wolves that night.
Touche.
Now, I enjoy that match. That match is actually on my list. It's a little higher, which we'll get to in a little bit. But my fourth pick is SummerSlam 02, HBK, Triple H, and an unsanctioned match, which I guess technically shouldn't count, but does. And it's mainly because Shawn Michaels had been one of my favorite wrestlers growing up. His back injury coupled with going to college kind of eliminated watching wrestling as much as I had in high school. And then to see him return and have a near 30-minute match with one of his best friends, which the clique is wont to do, was great. And it was because it wasn't, for the most part, a wrestling match on his part. It was him trying to survive being an ex-full-time wrestler versus a guy who's currently a full-time wrestler and is, even though he's his friend, he's hell-bent on crippling him again. And so I got a kick out of that match. I really enjoyed Michaels being that vicious. I hadn't seen that side of him in, obviously, years. And it knocked out Lesnar versus The Rock, which really burns me up because, spoiler alert, I was unable to put a Rock match in SummerSlam. And that really is where I'm at with that match. What do you guys think?
Please, Steve.
All right. It's on my list as well. That's a fantastic match. And you hit it right on the head when you talked about having a main event level performer in there with somebody who wasn't all time great, but that time was essentially a non-wrestler almost out there in his jeans and his Corinthians t-shirt. But it seemed like the kind of match where you didn't really know what Shawn could do. And then Hunter hits that first backbreaker and Shawn sells it like it killed him. And you think, oh, this is going to be, you know, a great storytelling match. You know, they're going to save the stunts that Shawn is known for because his back can't do it. And then 15 minutes later, you have Shawn Michaels climbing a ladder and jumping through tables and all kinds of ridiculousness. So you really got the best of both worlds with that match. That is a fantastic, fantastic choice.
And
what about you, Bryan?
For the triple play, I would agree as well. Something I need to go back and revisit again. I said earlier about being scared for Shawn going against Razor. You know, the first time him coming back, I'd say he was one of my favorite wrestlers overall, Shawn Michaels. But, you know, to have him come back, and, you know, I was really sad when he had to leave, or he was gone for 4 years, but to come back in a match like that, you know, was scary. But again, that was those two professionals, even way back then, you know, it's just, it was a great match. Unsanctioned, a great unsanctioned encounter match.
Awesome. Now, before we hit the old dusty trail, is there anything else you want to reveal to the listenership? Where you hide the blue meth? What happened to Tio?
So I would like to – first of all, I want to say both of you have a real good weekend. I appreciate you having me on, Rich. Steve, it's great talking to you. And, Rich, you asked me if I had a couple ideas to come on and do a deep dive sometime. I'd like to do it with you. And I would like to say what I would like to talk about, it's a little foreshadowing, is the legend of Goldust. So maybe like the first year, year and a half of Goldust's career in WWE. A little bit about his background. Let's talk about that part before we get to all the wackiness that he did. But let's we can deep dive into the early career of Goldust.
That is, like, as soon as I go to my next break, which will be after we're done talking, that is not only, like, signed, sealed, it's delivered, that thing is checkmarked 8 times. To this day, I can talk to my 34-year-old brother, and I can just call him up and say, ask him what the creepiest words a man ever said in a wrestling promo, and he will say, eye-to-eye, face-to-face, nipple-to-nipple. And we will both laugh hysterically thinking about when we were kids watching Goldust sexually harass Razor Ramon at the workplace to the level that he was, like, completely shook. And so, yes, I love Goldust. I love old school. I loved his movie quotes. I mean, everything about old school Goldust is amazing. So, Brian, you will hit it out of the park, and we're going to have some fun doing that one.
I'll let some other callers get on. Let you do some emails. Have a real good weekend, gentlemen. Thanks a lot again for having me on.
Thank you, Brian.
No problem. That was Brian, 26-year VIP subscriber and future Deep Dive co-host. Now, I'm going to pause, if I can borrow the Steve Austin pause for the cause for a minute. And when we come back, we're going to take some emails and then drop some more knowledge on what we enjoyed in our top five here on the Deep Dive with Rich Fan.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
If you're a fan of MMA and then you're a fan of the Deep Dive, next week is going to be a fun one because one of my best friends in this whole wide world, Chris Maitland, will be joining me to discuss Mayweather-McGregor. And we're not going to be talking about it in a regular form. We're not going to do a tale of the tape or anything else here. You guys know on the Deep Dive, I overthink things. So we're going to talk about the history of race in combat sports. We're going to talk about guys like Jack Johnson. We're going to talk about Joe Louis. We're going to talk about the significance of having a statue of Rocky in Philadelphia, but not one of an actual fighter that fought in Philadelphia. So that's going to be one of my most fun episodes of the Deep Dive, mainly because it's going to be us talking and getting real about some issues that led into this fight. Steve, what are your thoughts on Mayweather-McGregor, and do you have a winner?
As far as the winner, Mayweather, without question, it's kind of embarrassing to me that they even sanctioned such a fight, but, you know, money talks, essentially. And I just hope that for the what they're charging to watch that fight, it at least goes past the third round.
Absolutely. And one of the things I wanted to talk about before we continue going is some of the fine work you've been doing with your podcast, and if you could drop some 411 on the listeners and where they can hear it.
All right. I have been doing a show for placetobenation.com with my good friend Will from Texas. It's more his show, but I am on a majority of the episodes. The show is called For Your Consideration and drops Wednesdays on the Place to Be Nation podcast wrestling feed. We are going in depth as to candidates for the Place to Be Nation greatest WWE wrestler ever project. If you'd like to get in on that, contact at Place to Be Nation on Twitter, and we can get you in touch with someone to get involved with the Facebook discussion and get you on the road to helping us decide who was the greatest WWE wrestler ever.
Awesome. And I think that sort of debate, it can get pretty contentious. So do you guys start throwing bows, hang up on each other? Like, how bad does it get?
Sometimes there are feelings hurt. You know, there are consequences or repercussions when you have grown men who are this passionate about people dressing in spandex and pretending to fight. This debate goes all the way back to the Vince Senior era. I believe 1953 is our starting point all the way through present day. And this is a discussion that's nuanced. It will last through the end of the year. I think we are shooting for around the Survivor Series to finally get this thing wrapped up.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for sharing, and I hope everyone gets a chance to listen to For Your Consideration on PlaceToBeNation.com. You guys should definitely check it out, if anything, to hear the dulcet tones of Mr. Williams and get some wrestling knowledge. Because here's the thing. I do the deep dive. This is stuff that I can come to mind. I can research. I can remember. Steve's pulling this stuff out of his head as he's talking, which is far surpassing anything I've got. So this is really impressive, and I'm really enjoying the show, and I hope you guys will too, for those of you who aren't listening live. So, Steve, we're going to start with an email. It's from Jeff. Jeff is always a great contributor on Twitter, and he's just a good dude. His top five is as follows. Five is SummerSlam 2001, Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle. Jeff says it was an amazing match, and Angle and Austin were on their game that night. My only complaint is that it had a trash disqualification ending. That is exactly why that match isn't on my list. I love both of those wrestlers. That match couldn't be on my list because of the Rude Warrior. If I was going to have one wonky ending, that was going to be my max.
It is on my list. I will save that for later.
Okay. And then we both agree, because I believe we've both said this next match is on the list. Hardy's, Dudley's, Edge, and Christian. SummerSlam 2000. Mainly this is in my top five because I was there live. Jeff, sweet baby cheesy. Amazing. The crowd was electric, and just to see those crazy spots live was jaw-dropping. I could imagine. My God. I'm jealous, Jeff. I'm very jealous. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's a sleeper for all-time greatest show, really, if you really look at it. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that match, oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, Jeff, you're the man. All right, and his number three, we both same church, maybe different pews. Brian Cena, 2013. Amazing match, amazing crowd. This is one of the matches I always remember from the rise of Daniel Bryan. And let me not forget to tip my cap to Cena, because Daniel was not in the ring alone. Well done, sir. Very few people acknowledge, and that's why it's on my list, which I'll get to in a little bit, but the Busaiku knee is the finish. That was something that wasn't the norm with Daniel Bryan at the time. So to see John Cena go down to a secondary finisher that Bryan had used as much in the WWE rings was amazing to me.
You know, something I forgot with that match, Cena went into that match with, was it a torn bicep?
Yes.
And had just a fantastic performance. You know, my hat is off to John Cena for that. He did some good business that night.
Yeah, it was insane. And then that was also the same night that Punk had that giant golf ball thing that was coming out of his elbow when he was wrestling Brock. So these, like, both of those guys were hell-bent on proving they could wrestle short of having a stroke in the ring, a four-star match.
Whew.
I mean, that's it. It's insane. Both of those guys are like, can you top that? Hey, well, my leg, you know, stopped working 5 minutes ago. My leg hasn't worked since 93. It's like, okay.
The staph infection running through their veins turned them into superhuman mutants. It's amazing.
Yeah. Whoever the WWE, like, doctors are back there that administer pain meds, they have to have again, near Kevorkian level of drug interaction knowledge, because that's insane. It's insane. But I digress. His number two was British Bulldog and Brett, a wrestling clinic in the main event for the Intercontinental title at Wembley. I mean, yeah, the fact that it was the Intercontinental title in the main event. And let me use that opportunity to also highlight one of the things I noticed in doing this list. I was remarking to my buddy, this is a perfect dichotomy, and it could have been a deep dive on its own, of the relationship between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Because to me, the MVP of SummerSlam is Bret Hart, and Shawn Michaels is obviously Mr. WrestleMania. So, of course, of all the pay-per-views that Bret would be the main MVP for, it's the pay-per-view that could be WrestleMania, but it's hidden in the middle of the summer. So you got to work a little bit harder to find it, whereas Shawn is always out in front.
And recall at Stutzy on Twitter, when this topic was broached, was the first one I noticed to call out that if you didn't have these parameters, his list would be the Heavenly Bodies versus Steiners and then a whole bunch of Bret Hart matches. Yeah, Bret Hart absolutely just owned SummerSlam, without a doubt.
I actually got a tweet before the show started, and it was from, let me make sure, Mark Bright. He said that if HBK is Mr. WrestleMania, I think Cena is Mr. SummerSlam, with great matches with Y2J, Edge, Orton, Batista, Punk, Bryan, Lesnar, Rollins, and AJ. I can't fight that either.
Yeah, I'll agree to disagree on that. That's a solid list, but I think a lot of Cena's best work has come either the month after or the month before SummerSlam. Oftentimes, I think his SummerSlam matches have been lost in that shuffle.
Yeah, and most people don't know going into this year's SummerSlam, Cena is on a 5-year losing streak with the aforementioned AJ, Rollins, Lesnar, Bryan, and Punk. So this guy, for all of the Cena never loses, I was talking to Bruce about this, and one of the main reasons you have a guy like Cena not lose is so that when he loses the every SummerSlam, each one of those were big events. Now, granted, Bryan's was overshadowed by the man whose lack of respect for high flyers created my show title, but you know, you still have to accept the fact that Bryan beat Cena clean. There was no shenanigans. There was no lights turning out, blood in a bucket, or anything silly like that. And before I derail Mr. Jeff's email further, let me get his number one. We've already talked about it. SummerSlam 02, Michaels and Triple H. My all-time favorite wrestler in North America was making his return, and I was excited and nervous, and what came was an amazing match. Great storytelling and great performances by both men, especially HBK having been gone from the company for 4 years and not showing any ring rust, which is, I mean, we talked about the craziness, like you mentioned the ladder. That is also a thing we didn't talk about. The fact that he didn't have any signs of maybe some of what Shane did during the Survivor Series tag match, where he's potatoing guys and they got to return fire in order to kind of calm them down, as Jericho mentioned on Talk is Jericho. Brett is a guy who was always a soft wrestler. Shawn was always a guy who was seen as a trustworthy wrestler. So to still have that trustworthiness and mitigate a recovered back injury was amazing thing.
Well, that he dove off the ladder through the table, and then right before the comeback, he does a damn nip-up and sells it like he couldn't believe he did it. And then he's got the jittery legs and his whole body shaking. He's got this pain look on his face. Like, it may kill him, but he's going to put in one more Hall of Fame-level performance. But Shawn Michaels is just an incredible professional wrestler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no superlatives are enough for him as a wrestler, and I'm sure no cuss words were enough for him as a performer up until him and the Lord decided to hang out, you know. But before we get to the next email, I want to talk about our number threes. I'm going to switch up as if this is a snaking draft. TLC 2000, we've talked about it, but that's my number three. I really enjoyed it. They went over the top. Edge, Christian, the Dudleys, and the Hardys. It's amazing to me that all six of them would go on to be mitigating degrees of success as singles wrestlers, and two of which finding their way to TNA in order to do so at a high level. But for me, this was probably topped the triangle ladder match they had the year before, or not the year before, the WrestleMania of the same year.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is the best match of their series. Going back to the first tag team ladder match previous October at No Mercy, then you had the
Terry Invitational Tournament.
Yes, the TIT Tournament, if you will. Then at the Rumble, you had the Hardys and the Dudleys in just a straight-up tables match, which is underrated. I mean, that match is a banger. If you haven't watched that in a long time, check that out. The Triple Threat ladder match at WrestleMania, and then they came in with the TLC concept here and just put it all on the line. These guys became made men with me that night. Whereas WrestleMania, heading into that, you had the Dudleys were coming into their own. The Hardys were established. Edge and Christian seemed like kind of the odd man out at that time. They were kind of lame baby faces. They won the titles kind of out of nowhere compared to the heat the other teams had. But coming into this match, Edge and Christian were just on fire as characters, and they had found their voices. And I think it really helped the story of the match. The only knock I have on it is that the match was in North Carolina.
you're going to put the title on the Hardys the next month anyway, you know, why not just do it here? That crowd would have exploded for Jeff and Matt to get those titles that night.
Yeah, and that seems to be the curse of the hometown crowd not getting what they want. That the WWE seems to just live in that world. And even despite that, I thought it was still, obviously it's on the list, and it's one of the better shows that we had overall. Like you said, 2000 is an embarrassment of riches in terms of what you saw in that match, or in that show.
I mean, you look at that show, you got Chris Jericho versus Redacted, 2 out of 3 falls. Fantastic match. You had Steve Blackman murdering Shane McMahon, which is a lot of fun. The Rock, Triple H, and Kurt Angle in the main event, which turned into more of a storyline, guy kind of match. But still to have wrestlers of that level all available at once is just ridiculous.
I completely agree. And I think, to me, that whole show could be a show in terms of how the heck did they get all of that firing on all cylinders at one time. Before we take a call, I'm not going to do the break now. We have 2 more emails, so let me just power through. My buddy Kent, who I work with at the Outstanding University of Pittsburgh, decided to email last night with his list. And so his number five is Undertaker versus Undertaker, 1994. No, just kidding. So when I was reading that, I was like, wait, what now?
And I was about to tell you to throw that email in the trash.
I mean, Ken's funny. He's a funny dude. So the timing on that was really good on him. But his real number five is Cena versus Styles, 2016. May rise up the list as time goes on, but it was a great match that kicked off the series. I don't think any of the other meetings top this, but that doesn't mean they weren't as great.
Yeah, I would co-sign that.
All right, for his number four, he's in the club with Hardys, Dudleys, Edge, and Christian. They somehow top the triangle ladder match at Mania and pretty much create the TLC match that still resonates today. We're both on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
Lesnar, Angle, 2003. These are probably 2 of my all-time favorites, and they tore the house down before Lesnar submitted. Think about that phrase in terms of today's Lesnar. In my dream world, these two put on an all-time classic at WrestleMania 34.
You know, I haven't watched that match since the SummerSlam box set came out in 2008. I think I really need to go back and revisit that because I've heard other people praising that match earlier this week. I need to really re-examine that match.
Yeah, I agree. I love that match. I thought it was really good. Lesnar is sneakily, despite his lack of track record, a Mr. SummerSlam in his own right in terms of the matches he's had with people, because in every match, it's always someone that's a little smaller than he is, with the exception of The Rock, where The Rock is tall, but no one's built like Brock. And
right.
He sells. He does a good job. Like Brock, for all the complaints about him being in business for himself, which I don't see as a problem, he makes you look like $1 million if you're in the ring with him and he respects you. And you can't say much more than that about the guy. This number two, it burns me up because I couldn't put The Rock on my list. So having Triple H versus The Rock, ladder match 98, to me this match is what truly opened the door for these two to go to the main event. Everyone saw the potential in both, but this match showed they could steal the show and put on main event quality matches. To this day, I don't think the Triple H Rock feud gets enough love for one reason or another, but their intercontinental title matches were the best feud.
Yeah, that's one of those matches that's universally praised, and obviously the crowd at MSG loved it, and it did become a launching point for both guys. But it's never spoke to me that way. It's another one that maybe I need to revisit because I haven't watched it in probably 15 years now. It's always just been missing a little something with me. And I'm not sure if that's on me or if that's on them.
Yeah, I got you. And I'm in the same boat. Like, I wanted a Rock match. I had the Triple H Shawn match in, so I eliminated that. But the 98 match, to me, I still have burned in my head being a junior in high school and just not standing Triple H beating The Rock. I knew Rock was getting ready to go on to bigger and better things. Like, I knew with that signal, but still, you could tell that, like, these guys were just fierce rivals even back then and how much they wanted it.
I mean, the Intercontinental title was kind of buried after that because Hunter, I don't know if he got hurt in that match or it was right afterwards, but he did nothing with the IC title after that. In fact, he didn't come back full-time until right before the Rumble 99.
Right. And it's so funny to me because if you look at the triangle between Austin, Rock, and Triple H, the levels at which they were fighting for these belts, and then Austin moves up. So now it's Triple H and Rock, and then Rock moves up, and then Triple H is kind of by himself, gets hurt. And that was the story. Like, Triple H's injuries, that would be, again, another deep dive. His injuries were probably the most fortuitous things of his career because each time they occurred, they allowed him to take a step up where most people would have taken a step back.
Oh, absolutely. I'll never forget that damn that U2 song they used to pump up his return at the first Raw of 2002. I mean, you would have thought that Jesus himself was coming back to the Garden.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day. Yeah. To this day, my buddy Chris, who's going to do the show next week, he was like, the worst thing the WWE ever did to him as a fan was making me believe Triple H was a person I should root for. Because after that, he comes back and he's all right. But then he's basically a royal piece of crap because isn't that the path he took to beat Jericho eventually? For the Undisputed title?
Yeah, Jericho was dog watching and killed the dog and was Stephanie's
favorite
boy
dog,
toy, or whatever the hell it was. Yeah, that whole first quarter 2002 is garbage.
The awkwardness of Stephanie-related relationships and how they always ended with Triple H beating the holy crap out of the person.
Yeah, every time.
Every single time. LaSai. And number one, heart to heart. Heart versus heart in the cage, 94. Not much needs to be said. Owen and Bret do unique spots, tell a great story, and suck you in through the whole match.
That's another one of those matches that I went in having just read the recap in WWF Magazine for years. And by the time I finally saw it, I think I just built it up in my own head so much that it just could not stand up to the hype. I have a bias against the big blue cage to begin with, the playpen. That match was just long and it big bump, sell, crawl toward the door, somebody stops. I love the finish, but other than that, yeah, I'm not real big on that match.
I'll see. We'll have some words about this in a few moments, sir.
Oh,
well,
I like it.
we're definitely going to definitely get on that. But before we jump on that, let me talk about Kent's great matches eliminated by the rules. Heart Bulldog, which we talked about. We had a good chat in my office about this one. Heart and Soul. Heart Undertaker with Michaels as the ref, which, as Kent astutely mentioned, kicked off the start of that part of the Attitude Era.
Oh, it's my favorite screw job finish of all time.
And like, Kent even went so far as, like, I forgot about the scene of Michaels counting to three and being disgusted at himself because he knows why he had to count. He knows he had a role in the count. And it's just, he's just sick with himself. And then finally, you know, by the end of this, he's embracing the inner jerk and DX is born. And so that is such a good, and Undertaker, just, if we talk about Luke Harper doing too much over the top rope, 1997 and 2001 Undertaker was a WMD.
Back to Shawn Michaels with Bret's spit still hanging off his face. Every count, he counts one, it looks Bret right in the eyes with this look like, oh, you MF, or I'm going to get you now. Counts two, same thing, like, come on, man, kick out. And counts three and rolls out of the ring, cusses to himself, wipes the spit off his face, and then it's on from there. Just fantastic storytelling.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Absolutely love it. Kent, thank you for the email. And we're going to take one more break. And then when we come back, we're going to finish up with Steve's number three and beyond. And I'm going to give you mine. And we have some more callers and emails and all sorts of fun things. So stay tuned. And we'll be back ASAP on the PW Torch Livecast Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I, of course, am Rich Fan.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events. And then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
All right, we're back. That was editor-publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch, Wade Keller, talking about the Wade Keller podcast on the Podcast One Network. Definitely take a listen. It's fun. It's intriguing, and Wade always brings it. And obviously, as the grand poobah of this whole shebang, he brings a level of professionalism, quality, and journalistic integrity you won't see in few other places. Melby Award winner. If you can't trust a Melby Award winner, I don't know what's wrong with life.
You know, once they recognize you in that great Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, I mean, you're a made man in the wrestling world after that.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, I call Bruce now future Melby Award winner. And when he wins it, you know, the Torch will have two to the Observer's one. And I know everyone's all friendly in the wrestling newsletter biz, but I keep scoring everything, so I keep scoring.
I mean, we do track the receipts here on the Deep Dive.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a receipt-friendly site. If you think Susan Lucci isn't going to be a person I try to get on the Deep Dive, you guys don't know me very well. If I can get her to call in and say I have the receipts, that will be something I'll get Wade to put on the audio wave so I can have as an instant thing here in the studio. But enough of my pettiness. Let's talk about your number three, Steve. What do you got?
You know, my number three has already gotten significant talk on this episode, so I'll just drop it and keep it moving. It was Triple H versus Shawn from 2002. One thing I will add, that Kylan made me feel like an old man when he reminded me that this match was 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting to that point with a lot of things where it's like, oh, wait, 89? It's like you start carrying numbers. Like, wait, that was a smooth 18, 28 years? What, like, can I like pretend that wasn't almost 30 years ago? Because that means I'm old.
Yeah, I had to delete and redo a tweet the other day where I said an Undertaker Shane McMahon confrontation in 1991 was 15 years before their match. When I realized I was off by a decade, that was 25 years before their match. Good Lord, where's my life gone?
Yeah, I mean, Undertaker, man. Yeah. Undertaker is always a study, and this dude has stayed wrestling how long? Because he went through so many eras. Like, he went through Hulk, but then he also went through Brock. Like, how
right.
do you – the longevity is real. So now, what do you have for your number two?
All right, my number two is the aforementioned TLC 2000. Young guys putting it all on the line, breaking necks, shortening careers, don't try this at home material. It is just an amazing, amazing stunt show.
Yeah, really, like you said, I enjoyed it. So we're off by one on that. We're actually off by – now here's where our biggest difference is going to be. You had it at four. I have it at number two, Cena Daniel Bryan. I love the fact, one, that this was a one-in-a-million shot where Cena as champion, it was a very Japanese thing where he said, I am going to declare who my challenger is, and I want it to be a guy who I feel deserves it the most, Daniel Bryan. Daniel stepped up and knocked him straight out, and similar to the Triple H situation when Randy Orton cashed in and won the title from a beleaguered Daniel after having caught a pedigree, it just added to my disdain for both wrestlers.
You know, it led to a terribly disappointing fall season heading into even the Rumble, the first of a couple consecutive Rumbles that were ruined by fan response. But they really shot themselves in the foot, but eventually did correct course with that fantastic WrestleMania 30 moment of the coronation of Bryan, which, looking at the way things turned out, I am very much grateful that he got that moment before everything was taken away from him.
Absolutely. I know in the news right now he's talking, he was on Edge and Christian's podcast talking about how he's attempting to come back, and after his contract runs out, see if he gets cleared by outside doctors. And I am in the camp of enjoy your life, man. You got a daughter, you got an awesome wife. Like, it's not worth it. But he had a line in the Edge and Christian podcast that was very poignant to me, because he said he hopes that Birdie Joe find something for her that is wrestling for him, because wrestling was the thing. He mentioned this several times, tongue in cheek, but you could feel the honesty. He felt like in his life he isn't an ambitious person, and there weren't too many things he was naturally good at, but wrestling was the one thing. And so he pursues it not for money, but because it's that thing that centers him. And so it's both so poignant, but also so, I'm debilitated thinking about him being crippled or seeing him like Misawa die in the ring. That it just doesn't feel worth it to me.
Yeah, I don't want to see him come back full-time or even part-time. However, I would like to see him get one last match on a grand stage, whether it be WWE, whether it be a January 4th Dome show. Yeah, I hate to think that a career that magnificent would end via count-out on a random SmackDown episode. I think he should get a good grand send-off, but you have to know when to walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we get to our final call of the day, and before my wife stabs me because we have a date we have to get to by 7:30, so I can't go overtime, I'm going to go through my buddy Chris's list, and then we're going to take our final call and then finish up ours. Chris chimes in with his top five. He also wanted me to note to you all on the deep dive. You can talk to him next week. He didn't want to note that, but he wanted to note the fact that I have an unhealthy obsession with Power and Glory as a tag team, even though they won maybe one of their 38 matches they had as a tag team. Also on
Rich,
my bucket list, getting Paul Roma.
Hold up, brother.
Oh, go ahead.
Virtual high five on the Power and Glory love.
Oh, well done, Steve. Well done.
The damn Powerplex needs to be brought back today.
Yeah.
Call up Cassius Ohno, put him with Cesaro, Kings of Wrestling 2K18, bring back the Powerplex as our finisher, with Cassius Ohno being all of 280 or 290 or 310 or whatever the hell he is, as the Fat Boy Splash, and I am all in on that. I will buy all that merch.
Oh, yeah, Power and Glory. I did never like Hercules, but you put him with Pretty Paul Roma, and it was just magic. And the little half T-shirts. And
the goofy sunglasses.
Oh, and Slick. It was glorious. We went to WrestleMania in New York. What was that, 28 or 29?
Nine.
29.
Yeah.
And while we were there, we went to a local indie show in Jersey, and I went, and there was a guy selling a DVD, The Best of Power and Glory. I buy the DVD. This is pre-network, obviously. And it's 38 squash matches and one win against the Rockers. And my friends had a hoot laughing at me about it. And it was worth it. I can see it right now in my bedroom. It's on top of my dresser. Whenever I need that one shining moment, now I have the network, so it's not even necessary. But I am happy to have paid. And like I said, on my bucket list, if I can get Paul Roma on the deep dive, I feel like my life is a little bit more complete.
Hey, the reason that the Rick Martel Visionaries team became the first team to run the table at Survivor Series in 1990 was because he had Paul Roma and Hercules.
Yeah, they were the muscle behind that hustle right there. There's no disputing that at all.
Rick was too busy running away from the recently blinded Jake Roberts to be able to do anything. Roma and Herc were putting in work. Unintentional rhyme.
Did.
That's what's up.
Hey, we got it, man. Poets and did not know it. So let's go through this five real quick with Chris. Bryan Cena. I watched this match at a bar in Albany, and everyone crazy for Bryan pinning Cena. Then it all went bad. Yes. Yes, it did. First TLC match in WWE history. Number four, ENC versus Hardys versus Dudleys. We've talked about it. Here comes a new challenger. Word to
Shahid. Steve Austin versus The Undertaker from 98. Peak of the Austin era, going up against the force of The Undertaker. That is, again, Undertaker, all-timer when it comes to the matches he's had.
That's the best lead-in hype for any SummerSlam ever, was that Highway to Hell in 98.
Yeah, I mean, God, AC/DC, you have the logo. I mean, everything was just, it was perfect. It was perfect. And then their fights, those two were the best at brawling and being safe and not putting either person in a position where they have to worry. And it showed in the ferocity that they were able to show in the match.
And that's what sucked about the actual match itself. It's the one time somebody gets hurt. You know, they're on the
– yeah.
You know, where Austin kicks Taker and he pops up and just they butt heads on just the most simple spot, and Austin's concussed after that. And
right, man down.
Yeah, they did well, all things considered. It's a miracle it was as good as it was. But yeah, I would love to have seen that match under full health for both of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have number two, Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect from 91. Bret is one of Chris is the Bret guy. In college, I was the Shawn guy. That was not a good relationship, and then we kind of worked it out after we became adults. Bret is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, and this match put him on the map as a single star after a lengthy run as a member of the Hart Foundation. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Perfect was the Dolph Ziggler before Dolph Ziggler knew he was Dolph Ziggler, with a lot more personality and a lot less smarminess. And I'm talking about a guy who threw a 80-yard touchdown to himself being less smarmy.
That's I won't argue against anybody who pimps Bret versus Perfect. That's a fantastic match as well.
And then his number one is going to be a surprise for most people. The Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks.
Ooh.
The Mega Powers were on the same page, and Miss Elizabeth distracted the Mega Bucks in a way that was uncommon back then. That's right. She showed the yams.
In the alleged cocaine-fueled 1980s, a woman revealing a bathing suit was the most salacious thing that could be done on network television.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and she was always given that matronly personality and visage, so when she did something like that, this isn't like a Shotgun Saturday Night where Terry's just pulling her boobs out and you're supposed to just... You know, I remember because that was like the nascent days of the internet and everyone's furiously trying to find pixelated. Yes, I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt. Breaking news. Brian Austin is the third member of Team Power and Glory.
Brian, your half shirt will be in the mail, sir.
And that also reminds me, coming up on the 23rd of September. That's right. I'm talking a month from now. I will be doing with my buddy Chris Underrated Tags, and you can bet your bottom dollar that Power and Glory will be on that list, amongst other people as well. But Power and Glory, they're gonna be represented well. But yeah, that is amazing. Before we close up shop, let me take one more break, just so we can make sure the lights stay on here in live cast country. And when we come back, Steve and I are gonna power through our last call, and then our final three selections here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
And that's another part of the PW Torch family, the Wrestling Night in America with Pat and Greg. Hopefully you can have a chance to listen to them this weekend because we're talking SummerSlam. And hey, surprise, SummerSlam's on Sunday, guys. Get out there, listen, and enjoy it. So we're going to go to the home stretch. Steve and I are going to finish up. We've gotten our emails taken out. We still have Steve's number one. I'm going to give my number – I already gave my number two, so I could give my number one as well. And then we're going to take our final caller of the evening, and we're going to close up shop. So, Steve, what's at your apex? What's number one with a bullet?
Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle, SummerSlam 2001. Kurt at his just athletic, maniacal peak right before everything started to fall apart with his body, Austin, in the midst of his revised or renewed super work rate, I know my career's almost over, so I'm going to throw everything on the line, madness. Suplex after suplex, there's a belly-to-belly on the outside. You have Kurt Angle putting on the ankle lock on the outside of the ring and dragging Austin backwards up the steps into the ring to try to close it out. Austin just desperately taking out refs left and right. I thought told a great story that he knew he was done for. And then you had the whimper of a finish, which did make sense considering they were rematching the next month in Pittsburgh of Nick Patrick, the Alliance referee at the time. That's right, kids. That is when WCW was still a pretend thing with the Alliance. Nick Patrick comes in, calls for the bell to disqualify Austin for abusing the referees. And it's just such a fun match. If you haven't watched that match in a long time, go back and revisit Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle from 2001.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that match. The screwy ending is what kept it off for me. And my number one is one that you've mentioned already and you had some issues with. Bret Owen. In my brain, my favorite matches have moments. So if I ever get the chance to meet Stan Hansen, there's two things I need to do. I need to thank him for cutting a promo where he said, "Chosu Ricky," and every time he said it, he spit. And Domo Arigato, little person, to a nearby young boy. And actually, that's three things. And the third thing is the first Japanese match I watched with All Japan was Kobashi versus Stan Hansen. On the apron to a sitting Kobashi on the top rope, which murdered him. And that is burned into my brain. For this match, Bret and Owen, it's the look of terror on Owen's face when Bret might be able to make it out of the cage and he jumps three quarters of a length across the ring to tackle Bret. And that is a look that my younger brothers have given me and I have given them in fights and in other various competitions, and it was a very real thing for me. That's why that is my number one in the bullet. And what are your thoughts, Steve? I know we're ready to fight.
I can't argue that. Owen is an underrated I can't even think of the word. Goof doesn't seem appropriate, but just these great animated facial expressions when he can just tell things are falling apart. He would tell that story amazingly well. Like I said, it just seemed kind of slow and plodding. Rip Rogers, of all people, made me watch this match one time. And anybody who's heard Rip knows that he will give you four profanities when describing a newborn puppy. So he's just going on and on and on about how effing great this is. And I'm trying not to fall asleep, man. Maybe I need to rewatch it now as a mature adult. But like I said earlier, the finish was fantastic of Owen falling but getting his leg caught in the between the bar and the rope and being stuck upside down. And then Bret just casually drops down. You know, that part was great. The body of the match, I don't know, man. It just doesn't do it for me.
Oh, no, I get it. I get it. I completely understand. For me, it was just one of those things where I saw it, and it just sucked. It sucked me in. And I get having two younger brothers, the level of disdain Bret had for Owen and how much he refused to let his little brother win, especially in the shadow of – let me see. Let me make sure I got the timeline right. We are going into WrestleMania 10, correct? Or am I off by
– Coming out of WrestleMania 10.
Coming out of – so, yeah. So as a big brother – having lost, even though he had the pinnacle of winning the title that night, he had a loss to his younger brother to start the show. So that, you know, it's like, no, 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 this aggression will not stand, man. You just have to take care of it. So I definitely resonated with that. But yeah, it just burned into my brain.
See, and I loved the Mania match. The Mania match I thought was fantastic. And then you go into this match, and aside from the superplex from the top of the cage, which was great, I couldn't tell you any other real memorable moments. Whereas the Mania 10 match, I can give you three or four.
Yeah, and that's fair. But I think for me, it was the emotion coupled with it, because a lot of it was, you're right, it wasn't the cleanest match, but that's what appealed to me. It's kind of like when I talked to Bruce about the Goldberg-Lesnar match. I'm a big fan of sometimes it's a bar fight. And with this case, sometimes it's the Thanksgiving scrap with your brother when your mom's like, you guys can't do this, don't ruin my night, and you're doing it. And that's kind of what they did there with Helen and Stu and God. That era, seeing Helen and Stu in the front row was like watching, oh, I can't, never mind, I'm not going to go there.
Hey, now let's could just, you see a brawl at the Hart House Thanksgiving with cats stepping into mashed potatoes and Bruce outside selling gimmicks? That would be what Gorilla Monsoon would call a happening. I would pay to watch a Hart family Thanksgiving.
I would too. And you know, Smith, God bless his soul. I am, you know, as a wrestling fan, PW Torch contributor, livecast host, I'm on, you know, I'm completely egoless when it comes to this. I am no newsbreaker. I am no big grand poobah when it comes to wrestling knowledge. So having Smith Hart randomly send me Facebook messages the past like 5-7 years was just a hoot, because I'm like, I have a Hart family member that's writing me stuff, and this guy, you know, I'm fighting the urge to just be like, oh, tell me about this, because he, you know, randomly talk about Owen or randomly talk about Brett, or we shouldn't be fighting as a family. And I'm like, Smith, I've never been to Canada. I don't know why you're telling me. All right. God, thanks, Smith. Appreciate it. All right, bro. But yeah, so that's my life in a nutshell and why I love Owen, because I felt like once he joined the Nation, and I'm sure we're running over time, my wife is going to stab me. So if you guys find the body, know that it wasn't an accident. I don't care how she arranges it. It wasn't an accident. The Owen joining the Nation when he was the quote unquote Blackheart was so, should have been cringe inducing, but I just cackled and I was like, yeah, he is the Blackheart. I feel like he's listening to like DeBarge while the rest of them are Willie Nelson in it up, and he's fine with it. He's like, hey guys, I do what I do. But that was a long story for a short answer. So we're going to close up shop with Mr. Durrell. Durrell, welcome to the deep dive. Dive in, drop your list, and we can hit the streets.
Okay, how you guys doing? And yes, I'll go ahead and drop my list. My number five is Jeff Hardy versus CM Punk, PFC match 2009. Number four, John Cena versus Daniel Bryan. My number three, Undertaker, Edge, Hell in the Cell, back in 2008. My number two is Chris Benoit versus Randy Orton. And my number one will be Rock versus Brock.
Okay, so sell us on the Rock, well, not Rock Brock, sell us on the Undertaker Edge, because not too many people mention it, and then we've heard it twice today, one from you, and then again from, was it Kylan?
Yeah, I was there, and I forgot about that match.
Well, you know, to me, when it comes to, like, great SmackDown rivalries and stuff like that, Edge and Undertaker had one of the best. And that Hell in the Cell was awesome. They won the awesome matches that they had, not including the all the other matches. But, you know, just that and the WrestleMania matches, two of the two matches that stand out to me, that Hell in the Cell and the match they had at Mania that one year. So that one right there. But my number two is the match. I know I haven't really heard anybody say it, but just because of the next night, the moment that you got with Randy Orton sitting on the shoulders of Batista, and then the thumbs down and getting dropped. So that's why that's my number two, Chris Benoit versus Randy.
Awesome.
And then number one for Brock versus The Rock, the story that they was telling with the packages that they had when you got to see them guys training and Brock carrying the log, and Rock running the steps of Miami, the university, the youth, and how they put all that together and told that story. That's why that was my number one.
No, I tip my cap, sir. Those are good reasonings, and I think that's a solid list. Steve?
Yeah, I won't argue with any of that. That Hell in the Cell with Edge and Taker is kind of a forgotten gem, as is Batista and Cena from that same show. Yeah, that's I won't argue with that list at all.
Oh, well, Darrell, thank you so much for your time. Apologies, I can't let you continue and wax philosophic and potentially spoil Defenders, because I know you want to do it, Darrell. I know you do, D. You're a troublemaker. You and me are going to meet in Temecula. No, I'm just kidding. I really do have to end it because my wife is staring at me downstairs with, like, the look of Thanos staring at the Infinity Gems, like, this will happen one way or another, so you better hurry up. Steve, why don't you tell the fine folks, this has been fun, by the way, first of all, why don't you tell the fine folks where they can find you on social media, if you so choose, and where, again, they can find for your consideration.
Yeah, you can find me at SteveDubRN on Twitter. I am kind of in and out of Facebook, so you may not have success finding me there, but at SteveDubRN on the Twitter for thoughts on wrestling, old movies, and general shenanigans in life. And For Your Consideration drops on Wednesdays at placetobenation.com or the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Podcast feed, available anywhere podcasts are housed.
Awesome. Well, don't be a stranger, and I'm going to have you back on at your earliest convenience talking about whatever the heck you want to talk about, because this has been delightful. And, of course, this will also infuriate Travis, because this is now deep dive number 6. And Travis has yet to be on because he said, and I quote, "Good luck, rookie, sink or swim." And so since then, I've been swimming, and he ain't been in the pool. So,
you know, it happens, man. Plans change, unfortunately. And Travis, you know, there's plenty of room in this pool when you want to come on next year. We'll be more than happy to have you on.
Next year, 2018. I'm thinking maybe this time 2018. But again, we might want to do this list again. So we might need to push him to like maybe SummerSlam. Not SummerSlam, maybe Survivor Series 2018. We'll
Survivor Series of season 2 of the Deep Dive. I dig it.
Yeah. Outstanding. Well, you had a great night. This is Rich Fan. It's been a pleasure. You guys have a great night. I'm not going to steal Jericho's. I was going to say stay high, stay hungry. But I'm going to say what I always say every week. Dive into something new. Challenge yourself. Give yourself an opportunity to impress yourself. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this week's edition of the Deep Dive. If you have, hashtag it. Send me an email to pwtdive@gmail.com. Go to me on Twitter @rich_fan. Like the appliance with an extra N. And let me know what I can do better. Let me know what other shows you'd like me to talk about or other parts of the wrestling world you'd like to dive into. And we're going to go around this crazy green ball together and learn about the world of wrestling. So for Steve, I'm Rich. Have a great night and enjoy the rest of your day. Actually, psych, I'm still here. I want to tell you about a little quick thing. Here at the Torch, we have the VIP program. I want to give you some of the deets on that because I think when you become a VIP member, you get access to shows like this ad-free. You get access to a bevy of 30 years worth of the finest wrestling reporting and editorial content you can find bar none. And so I challenge you to listen to this next promo and not be convinced that you should join the VIP family.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cover Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.